beneficiaries and entities, land bank. You're welcome to this meeting. And let's welcome the TV man. You're welcome to the meeting. must indicate that this meeting it has been convened. It's one of the legacy reports, and I see my former minister. Welcome, minister. It has been part of the legacy report that we found as a as this new committee. So, for the purpose of us knowing each other, we are going to ask members to introduce themselves, and DG will introduce his team. I'm Rosina Simenya, the chairperson of the committee. I've put Honorable Stain, the member. Honorable Ramaphosa, can you just wait so that you can see? Honorable Ramaphosa, Honorable Ngave, Honorable Joseph, Honorable Nkosi Mandela, and we have officials from Parliament. I'm now going to ask DG to introduce his team. DG.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We will be quite a big group. On my right is Mr. Edwin Mushlalo, Chairperson of the BEE Chartered Council. And next to him is Kwena Kumapi, who is the Chief Director that deals with those matters. I then should have started with my colleague, and she can also introduce her own team. And Lindy Maglossi, the acting CEO of the Land Bank, who will introduce, I think you know the chairperson of the Land Bank Board, but maybe she can introduce Dr. Ngumani and Ms. Tampo. And is Dr. Patrick here? Hello, John. Then I have the chairperson, Mr. Diani, from the Forestry Council, Forestry Sector Charter Council, next to him, and Ms. Marimbela, who is also the Forestry Sector Charter Council, and maybe just behind me there's the CFO, Mr. Jacob Schlossweil. And then there are several members of the Land Bank Executive Team, but I think at the point that they present, they don't want the CEO to do it now, Chairperson.
Thank you, DG. CEO?
Thank you, Chair. Can I request the introduction to be done by Rob?
Okay.
She's okay in quarters, Honorable Chairperson. Okay, Chair. Next to me is Ms. Ngobo. She is the chairperson of REMCO. Dr. John Pages, chairperson of RISC. And then, of course, the acting CEO, she has introduced herself. Mr. Jerome Panza, our legal office head. Mr. MP, she's head of our Retail Emerging Markets section from the National
Treasury, from the Ministry of Parliament Liaison.
National Treasury.
Thank you very much. Now that we know each other, I want to take the opportunity to recognize the Honorable Humphrey Matungwani, member of the committee, and Honorable Ms. Tongwani. And we have received apologies from the minister and the deputy minister. And we have an apology from Honorable Shengwe, who's an alternate member. As I've indicated, this meeting has been convened after we have gone through the legacy report. There's been outstanding feedback from the department on the implementation of the Agri BE Charter, Forestry Charter. So I'm going to allow the DG to introduce the team for presentation. DG.
Members, we trust that you receive the presentations ahead of time. I'm going to ask the chairperson of the Forestry Sector Council, Mr. Pascal Diani, to do the presentation. I'm sorry, Edwin Mushalo to do the presentation.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you, honorable members. I'm, as the DG introduced, Mr. Edwin Mushalo, chairperson of the Agri BE Charter Council. It's a privilege being here, and thanks from the department for the opportunity. As I'm trying to find my feet, last time when I was here, I was a member. I became deputy chairperson, I came here as a chairperson. On the ground, honorable chair, this is a presentation of a council that has no office of its own yet. We are currently residing in a department directorate, BE Charters and BEE Charter compliance. I'm with my colleague, Ms. Gwena Komape, Chief Director, will assist with questions as well. Going forward, the background is there, then you'll know about who is the Agri BE Charter Council. Who is the Agri BE Charter Council? Our mandate as the council, our strategic overview, the acts and policy mandates, the strategic goals and objectives, the outcomes and key deliverables, and the budget. Thank you very much. The Agri BE Charter Council was established in terms of the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Act number 53 of 2003, and it's in accordance with the Rules of Good Practice, Statement 000, in Section 5.4. In terms of Section 5.4 of the Codes, the following represent the recommended model for setting up a Charter Council. That is the equitable composition of stakeholders as members of the council, application of good corporate governance principles in the council. The Agri BE Charter Council was thereby inaugurated on the 5th of December 2008 and consists of all the major stakeholders in the agriculture sector. Its first members were appointed by the minister for his first 3-year term of office for the purpose of gazetting the Agri BE Charter Code, Section 9.1. The provisions related to establishing the council are captured in Section 6 of the Agri BE Charter Code. This is my first term as the chairperson. The Agri BE Charter Council was established as an advisory body to the Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. Its main purpose is to advise the minister and the sector on all issues relating to transformation. Subsequent to this primary purpose, the Agri BE Charter Council plays a monitoring and evaluation role on the status of transformation in the sector. The council also serves as arbiter of issues relating to implementation of the Agri BE Sector Codes in the sector. The council consists of 19 members representing various institutions in the sector. The composition is structured as follows. The chairperson, independent person appointed the Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries.
9 members representing industry appointed from various subsector and organized agriculture organization formation. You will have your NAFU, you will have your AgriSA, you will have your ACTIS, you will have your market agents, etc. 4 members representing government. You will have your DAF, you will have your DTI, you will have your water affairs, and so forth. 1 member representing organized labor, you will have your FAU. 2 members representing director education and training authorities, that's it. 3 members representing broader stakeholders and target groups such as women, youth, and civil society. You will have your WAS and the YAD, etc., your Landless People's Movement. The composition of the council is a fair reflection of all the stakeholders and also in terms of race and gender. The function of the Agriculture Council includes responsible for alignment pertaining to issues of the Agriculture Code, monitoring the implementation of the sector, Agriculture Code in the agriculture sector, as well as to review it, provision of guidance on sector-specific matters affecting B in entities within the sector, completion of reports and status of B within the sector, facilitate communication and popularization of the Agri-B sector code, development of the implementation framework for the Agri-BEE, sharing of information with sector members, approved accreditation agencies, and Minister of DAF. Our mission, the principal advocacy agent in the transformation of the South African agricultural sector, the mission will be achieved through the creation of an enabling environment for transformation in the agricultural sector. This environment will be created through promotion of equitable access and participation of Black South Africans in the entire agricultural value chain, accelerated deracialization of land and enterprise ownership, ownership control, field occupation and management of existing and new agricultural enterprises, enhancement of efforts to unlock full entrepreneurial skills and potential of Black South Africans in the sector, facilitation of structural changes in the agricultural support system and development of initiatives to assist Black South Africans in owning, establishing, participating in and operating agricultural enterprises, increasing access of Black South Africans to economic activities, infrastructure and skills training, improvement of living and working conditions of farm and vulnerable workers, improvement of protection and standards of land rights and tenure security for labor tenants, farm workers, and other vulnerable farm dwellers. These are the legislative and policy mandates that talks to us, the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa of 1996, the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act of 2000 and Regulation of 11 December 2011, the Employment Equity Act of 1998 and as amended, the Skills Development Act of 1998 and as amended, the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Act number 53 of 2003, the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Code of Good Practice of 2007, the Agri-Sector Code 28 December 2012, the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Amendment Act No. 46 of 2013, the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Amendment Code of Good Practice Level 2 of 2013. That is to give the background and what informs our structure. The strategic goals and objectives. Strategic goal, transformation progress by the agricultural sector, monitored and to be reported on. To monitor the implementation of the Agri-B Charter in the agricultural sector, as well as to review the charter, provide interpretation and guidance with respect to the ACRB charter, sharing information with sector members and approved accredited agency, and facilitated communication and popularization of the ACRB charter. To advise the minister staff with regards to matters of the ACRB-EE, the strategic outcomes shape the way ahead in actionable terms, ACRB charter takings and scorecard targets being implemented by the sector stakeholders, public entities and enterprises, and that enterprises in our local and rural communities. Stakeholders are informed, aware, understand and act on BBB benefits and opportunities in the agricultural sector. Targeted stakeholders in specific communities and businesses are enabled to participate in BBB benefits and opportunities within the section of the industry value chain and enable transparency, fairness and consistency when measuring and adjudicating on matters related to BBB in the agricultural sector. Key deliverables action plan. Align ACRB sector goals to the amended BBB goals. Report on the status of broad-based land economic empowerment within the agricultural sector. Communication strategy and implementation plan. Council website. Awareness campaigns and outreach program coordinated. Interpretation guideline developed. Elements of scorecard. ACRB sector council's annual report submitted to Minister and DTR. The second phase is target. Our 3 years. There's operating expense there. Compensation of employees. Period for 12 months, which is envisaged to be 1,811,585.86. The goods and services for 12 months, 1,584,993.20. The travel and subsistence, 12 months, 1,173,900. Capital assets, 12 months, 430,000. Interest and rent on land, 12 months, 54,000. In total, our budget for 2015-2016 is in this age to be 5,154,379.06. You look at the notes, the estimated financial figures are based on the council being established as an independent entity, as I've alluded to my background. The projected annual budget for 2016-2017 is as follows, Madam Chair. Operating expense, composition of employees for 12 months in 2016-2017, 1,911,117.58. Goods and services, 12 months, 1,121,984.27. Travel and subsistence, 12 months, 1,343,964.50. Capital assets, 12 months, 453,650. Interest and rent on land reform, 12 months, 56,970 rand. Total is 4,887,686.5. As I've said on notes, estimate figures are based on council being established as independent entity. 2017-2018 projected annual budget, composition of employees 12 months, 2 million, and 16,229.5. Goods and services, 12 months, 2,611,407.40. Travel and subsistence, 12 months, 1,417,892,055. Capital assets, 478,675. Interest and rent on land, 12 months, 60,103.35. Total is 6,630,223.10. The estimated financial figures, as I've said, Madam Chair, are based on council as an independent body. I want to say thank you very much, Jalewoha.
going to church. Can we then have the Forest Sakatata Council to present? So members should note the questions.
Thank you very much, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Pascal Jani. I'm the Chaplain of the Forest Sector Charter Council. Next to me is Mrs. Makosa Zana Mavimbela. She's a researcher and part of the Secretariat in the office. Our presentation will actually touch the following areas. One, forest sector, two, forest sector charter, three, forest sector charter council, four, the status report for the financial year 2012-2013. The last one would be our business plan and priorities for 2014-2015. The forest sector, which is the industry, we are occupying a 1% space of the land in the country, over a million of hectares. The industry employs 136,000 in the forest following the sectors, sawmilling, pulp and paper, timber boards, mine timber, etc. We have 22.5% employment in agriculture. We provide about 850,000 livelihood support, contribute 1% of national GDP, and 7.7% of manufacturing GDP. Production mainly on pulp and paper and sawmilling products. Derives 70% of revenue from exports, and this information actually is an information from Forest South Africa statistics. On forest sector data, it originates from the Triple B Act number 53 of 2003. It was launched in 2005, established a steering committee. During the period 2009-2008, the draft charter was developed with the help of the working groups and the steering committee. In May 2008, it was gazetted for public comment, and in June 2009, it was published. Chairperson and honorable members, its main objective is to extend economic opportunities and benefits of forest sector to the previously disadvantaged black groups. Scope of application, growers, contracting, fibre, sawmill, coal, and charcoal subsectors. Forest Sector Council, which is known as the Council, was launched in 2008, and operating as Section 21 company. Its main responsibilities is to facilitate, oversee, and encourage implementation of the charter, to monitor and report on the charter undertakings, to monitor and report on the status report, to publicize the charter, and participate in government, industry, and council forums which are members of the technical groups of DTI. The Forest Sector Charter Council had three strategic sessions highlighting strategic objectives. Foresight exercise in 2011 to craft the preferred future for the charter. We had quarterly meeting on an annual basis. We're reporting to the three foreign structures, Presidential Bee Advisory Council, Minister of Trade and Industry, Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. I would imagine, Honorable Chair and members, when also we are summoned by this important structure, particular committee, will also come and do the reports. Our composition, 20 board members, and myself, independent chairperson appointed by the minister. If to say that in those 20 board members, we've got labor represented by COSATU and other trade unions that organize in the sector. We've got government, we've got industry, we've got community leaders that are appointed also by the minister. Continuation of financial year 2012-2013 BE status. An annual progress report and the scorecard implementation. Our fourth BE status report. The sector during that period was on level 5 status, a level decline from the previous year. On qualifying small enterprises, we achieved level 3. Exempted micro enterprises, we achieved level 4. Sector performing well in socio-economic development, enterprise development, preferential procurement. Were on average when we come to ownership. Performing very poor in management control, employment equity, and skills development. Charter review processes that are part of our business plan and priorities. This is done according to Section 16.2 of the Forest Code. The council is mandated to conduct a comprehensive review. That review should identify the achievements and shortcomings and assess if any adjustments are required. The charter review expected outcomes, comprehensive report underlining the following key issues and findings based on objectives of the review processes. Charter review expected outcomes. Comprehensive report underlining highlight of achievements, failures, modifications, adjustments when required, obstacles and challenges to meet implementation, and strategic and actionable recommendations. Possible alternatives for effective BEE implementation, monitoring and reporting. Who does this work? It is an independent service provider. It is managed by an established steering committee, the council and the service provider. It takes shape in the process of stakeholder consultation, which is already underway. Preliminary findings discussed by the steering committee. Steering committee have already adopted the first report end September. Charter review, preliminary findings. We also looked at whether the forest code is still relevant. Its life span. Because the recent lifespan of our code is 10 years. We are on the 5th year. So part of the work of the service provider is to check whether we're relevant or not. Mandate of the council. Representation in the council. awareness in terms of the court and the council. Realignment processes. Realignment processes on the court. Chair, I just want to indicate that a typing error, the DTI amended, are already pronounced and signed, not said to be pronounced. DTI gazetted the revised codes of good practice. The basis for all sector-specific codes. The sector council to align sector codes with amended codes of good practice. Realignment produces expected outcomes. Revised forest sector codes to align the forest codes with revised codes of good practice and triple BEE amended act. Realignment processes progress. Council and constituencies began negotiations in July. Scorecard on ownership, management control, skills development, and socio-economic development have been adopted. First draft devoid of enterprise skills development element reviewed by the council and the stakeholders. Final revised draft to be adopted on the 27th of November when we're having our council meeting. Final revised draft to be sent to DTI for 60 days for public comment. Anticipated date for adoption before the transitional period end in April 2015. Gazetted revised forest sector code is expected to be on the 1st of May 2015. An annual progress report on the scorecard implementation. Part of our business will also be looking at the fifth report, annual report, analyze level of compliance within 0 and 5 years targets, objectives, assess the status of transformation in the forest sector. This exercise should be taken by a service provider managed by the steering committee. Preliminary report discussed by the steering committee in September. Preliminary report suggested, as we speak, that it would be level 4. Final report to be presented to the council on the 27th of November. The budget. Our budget is as follows, Honorable Chair and members. 50% of our budget is coming from government and 40% of our budget is coming from the industry. Chair, this is our projected level. We've got the following items. The charter and the alignment process that I've already reported. The BE status report that actually we're supposed to do annually. The council capacity building for members. Enterprise development and skills development initiatives. Communication strategy and plan of the council. Web-based portal. Outreach programs, because we think it is very important that we're committing and have in touch with the community when we're doing this work. Community and labor specific initiatives, employee compensation, charter functionality, other operating expenses. Chair and other members, we're looking at a budget which is just over 8 million. Oh. Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members, for the opportunity to do the presentation.
Thank you very much. Members, that was the presentation. I'm going to allow members to ask questions. And you must refrain from speeches, because we don't have time. We have plenary today. Just reminding members, ask questions. I'll start with the member Jaisa, and welcome Honorable Jason, Honorable Mabe, Honorable Mandela, Honorable Sane, and Honorable Makhlaku.
Yeah, thank you very much, Pastor. I just want to check here what support that is given to these two, that is Sabi and Mirezi. Because I have this question, because I've just noticed that in the area from where I'm coming, it seems now that the department or local government or municipality there is in favor of Sabi instead of Mirezi when it comes to the issues of certain needs in order to work. I just want to check now, like, this support, if there is support, how much is that support is given for these two? I just want to check on that. I don't want to be long. I'm sure if my question was clear, I think I should stop. Thank you very much.
No, mine is directed to RBE. I don't know whether I should ask now. Okay. The only question I have for them, in their vision, it stated that they are the principal advocacy agent in the transformation of the agricultural sector. Now, I want to know from them that so far, what are the challenges that they have identified in the transformation of the agricultural sector? Thanks.
Thank you. Let's thank the department for their presentation. I just want to gain clarity, particularly in forestry, Chairperson, with the entity and the support that the department affords. I would like to check on Langeni Forest in Mthatha. What support is being given to the local communities to run the forest and ensure that they are able to have it fully transferred to them as a community. In Yuki, we have PG Bison that is there. Who is PG Bison in partnership with in terms of the local community, and what is the local community benefiting? And what stakes do they have in that? You have in KZN, as you come out of Kokstad, headed out to Harding, in Geli Forest, community has made claims over and over, seeking assistance from the department for the forest to be transferred to them. And year in, year out, they are disappointed. Seemingly, the department is failing our communities in this regard. What is the department doing in that regard that the people and the communities in and around Ingel Forest are able to benefit from the process and are able to have the land transferred to them? Lastly, Chairperson, if you know of an area under Sandanese Traditional Council in a village of Sandanese just outside Donnybrook and Bulo in KZN, land under traditional leader there, Nkosi Mkhulisi, has been a pain over years with his community forests that have been handed out to Sapi and not that of the community. I'd like to understand from the department these certificates that they are awarding. Why are they continuously awarded to entities such as Sapi, Mirenski, PG Bison, and not to local communities? How do we then ensure that we do transformation of the sector and empower our own people? Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I would also start with the Forestry Sector Charter Council. I was here last year, Chairperson, when I came and made a presentation with CIFCO, and I would just ask a few questions from last year, because I must say I'm quite disappointed that we don't get reports from what happened last year. Not to say that because there's new members of the portfolio that Parliament is totally new, so we had the information from last year, and the things that you said last year, that the main challenges were insufficient data collection, no prescribed methods for action against non-compliance, land availability, the pace of settling forest-related land claims, zero import tariffs and insufficient funding. And I think many of the things that I'm mentioning is linking to what Honourable Mandela asked. For me, the disappointment was the very slow pace of land transformation on state-owned forestry land. So if we can get a full report on what happened, the progress in the last few years, it's no good in kind of telling us what you do. We need to see the progress, where you were and where you're going to. Link to that, Chairperson, I would like to know also on the composition of the 20 board members, who exactly sits on this board representing which sectors of the forestry sector industry. And just for interest, it's both for you and the AgriBEE, what does an independent chairperson mean? Does it mean that you are not elected by the board members and appointed by the minister? The word independent chairperson just sounds very interesting, and I would like to know if we want to go or do that. What does it mean? Because if you are appointed by a minister, it doesn't look to me like you're very independent, but that's my own. I don't know what it means. It's just interesting that both of you are said independent chairpersons. So just on that, I think it would be difficult for them to give out that full report, but we need a full report on the progress on transformation, especially the state-owned land, which is a massive amount of land, and I can find it if you were looking for it very quickly. Then, to the AgriBEE, Chair, I might just want to make a short note on this to say that it's nice to see a young person moving through the ranks. He's been here in the part, as he explained, as a normal member and then as deputy chair and now the chairperson, so it's also good to see that people are moving up the ranks. Chairperson, a few things that I got from them also. We have received no reports, and I've seen in your slide that you're supposed to give annual reports to the ministers, both agriculture and trade and industry, on your annual report, and if this committee can get hold of those reports, I was trying to get hold of this, see if I can find it on the website, but I couldn't find it. What I could find on the website is that you have now what you call a portal, both of you, that you can upload the scorecard. Maybe if we can see that in future, that we can see if there's progress. How many of the, how many of the industry are actually participating in it? Do you move forward or do you move backwards? And what are you doing regarding making sure that people take part in that? Then she also said, for that details of the members, I know that you've tried to mention them quickly, but we would like to know who are actually sitting in these boards. Then on slide 8, Chairperson, looking at mission, I can just get that. I looked at last two specifically because there's a lot of discussion about it currently, about improvement of living conditions for farm and vulnerable workers and protection and standards of land rights and tenant security for native tenants. My question links to the following question or the last question that I had, and that's regarding your funding, the budget. If I look at your budget proposal, it looks like you only have money to pay for, I don't know if you get salaries or are you being paid per meeting that you attend. What if you don't have money to do the work, like you have stated in your mission, to ensure that these things happen? What's your role then? I don't know if I'm trying to make it clear, but I'm reading your mission, and it's a massive mission. If I look at the budget and you don't have the funding to go and do that, to go out and to actually have maybe awareness days and monitoring on the ground, because that's the challenge, Chairperson, with that. The departments have budgets and have programs in place, but no one goes out and monitors. Who are you supposed to monitor the department, or is the department supposed to monitor your work? That's the kind of questions that I'm having, because if the department has you as an entity that you're supposed to monitor transformation in the agricultural sector and in the forestry sector, but you don't have a budget to go and do that work, you know, are we fooling ourselves now? The department come report, no, this is these people, you know, appointed to come and do the work, but the people appointed doesn't have the budget to do the work. So if we can get clarity on that, I would appreciate it. Thank you, Chi.
Thank you very much, Chair. You will understand we don't focus on forestry much in our discussions in this department and portfolio committee. The focus is mainly on agriculture and fisheries in terms of our previous discussions. Therefore, there will be many questions. But just to throw another on what Honorable Mandela said, through another area which is mainly dominated by SAFCOL, and that is the Sikama area. The problem is accessing land by the people of the area. Land there is mainly owned by SAFCOL, and people really don't have access. So if you can elaborate on because you've said something around that, not necessarily SAFCOL or Tsitkama, you said something in relation to that in terms of people benefiting. So if you can elaborate on that one. 146,000 workers employed in sawmill, pulp and paper, timber board, you name it. I know for a fact that generally in that sector and in many of those areas, it's not mainly permanent jobs. Take us through as this 146,000. What kind of jobs are we talking about here? Because the government and this committee is concerned about jobs that are not permanent. Because this radical shift that we're talking about, it's one of the things that we need to deal with. Quality, permanent jobs. Maybe you will shed light on that one, Mr. Dan. The other one would be on slide 8. Second level 5 status, a level decline from previous year. Please, if you can tell us what the reasons of the decline. And on the last one on page 9 or slide 9. And poor performance in management control, employment equity and skills development, etc. I'm sure you do get it. It's important because as we identify the problem, we also need to say what are the causal factors and what is our improvement plan, so that we will be clear in terms of the problem. Thanks.
Honorable Yonglot. Okay, Chairman. Chairperson.
I note that you say that there are 146,000 workers in employment. I would like to know how many people have been laid off. You know, do you have a percentage of people who lost their jobs, especially in the light of the department's exit policy, which was announced a couple of years ago, which was revised subsequently, planting of the forests, as far as I know, haven't started in areas of the Western Cape specifically. And I've been told that there are entire communities of forest workers in Western Cape. I'm speaking specifically about an area near Johannesburg. I'm talking about Geraardton in the Southern Cape. I'm talking about Geloofboom near George, where people are unemployed, former forestry workers, unemployed and living off state pensions or state assistance. I would like to know whether there has been an investigation. Have you gone and looked what the situation on the ground is, what the problems and difficulties are experienced by these workers, and do you have a plan to assist these people? Thank you.
Rosa?
Thank you, Chairperson. If you go to AgriDEE slide 6, in terms of one of the functions of the Charter Council, it reads, develop the implementation of a framework for AgriDEE. My question to the Council, were this framework developed and was it implemented? If you go to page 7 of the same presentation, early on a question was posed in terms of what is the challenges, but with that I would also like to ask, what did you do in terms of advocacy pertaining to the transformation of the South African agricultural sector? What did you do in terms of advocacy pertaining to the transformation of the South African agricultural sector? If you go to the first sector charter on page 5, I must say I like this objective, but usually this objective is so smart, there's usually a failure to implement the objective. So, it reads to extend economic opportunities and benefits of our sector to previously disadvantaged groups. I would like to pose again to the forest sector, what did they do pertaining to the main objective of them since the inception up until today? That's the one area. In terms of page 8 of the same presentation, it's only 30 that I'm sitting there. I do not understand the levels, so I can't pose a real question, but I would like to be clarified, what do you mean by the different levels? Is there a breakdown? If you refer to a level, what is the breakdown? How do we can interpret those levels? So that is the type of clarity that I'm seeking. That is the question, Jefferson. As you have requested early on, you must keep it simple and short.
Okay. You're welcome, Honorable Member. From my side, AgriDEE, in your mission, you indicated that you deal with issues of labor and farm workers and vulnerable farm dwellers. Can I get the concrete activities and outputs as well as the overall impact in terms of looking at the rising level of farm evictions and intimidation? can we get concrete activities that and output that you are involved in? The other question is on the your projected budget is only starting on, if I've seen it correctly, 15-16, but you've not actually give us the status quo for 2015. Can we get the status quo for 14 and 15? And the last one is on the both forestry and agriculture. In terms of your consultation, communication strategies, because we can't hear you. Why? Whom are you communicating with? At what level? Where are you? If you can just get that clarity, because I've seen you've got your communication strategy, both of you, and you're talking about community consultation. Being the chair, I've never heard of you. So where, in which areas do you communicate, or focus on the areas that you operate, or where can we get that clarity? And the members, one member asked about the awareness campaign. How do you raise awareness? Thank you. Can we get answers through you, Dishi?
Dishi is on the camera, so this is the best, okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. In terms of the composition, I indicated that it's industry, and industry has got its own affiliates, which is the Pulp and Paper Association, South African Forest Contractors Association, Forest South Africa, Sawmilling South Africa, South African Wood Preservation Association, you've got COSATU, and with this COSATU, you've got COSATU affiliates. There are two that are operating in this space. It is SIPAU and FAU. At this stage, only SIPAU is represented and COSATU in the board. But there is actually a space for FAU to come and participate because they also operate in this particular industry. Government is represented by the Department of Trade and Industry, Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries, Department of Rural Development and Land, Department of Water, IDC. Well, a person also sits right as independent. Maybe Chair, it is precisely because of the mandate that is given by the minister, the appointment letter. It means to say you're independent. You're not belonging to any of those particular stakeholders within the council. You chair, direct, assist the meeting, but obviously from time to time the chairperson has to consult with the minister on a number of issues. So I'm not sure the Honorable Chairperson and members, I attempted to answer this independently.
And
the levels.
The levels.
Yes. You want to see the levels? Well, when you talk about the level, you have level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4, level 5, and we saying on this particular financial year, which is 2012-2013, our sector was level 5 stages. And we think we have performed in a decline. We performed badly as compared to the previous year. But the previous year was level 4. And we begin to identify those particular areas where we have not actually performed very well in terms of the elements. What is doing is that the service provider will take a process where he consults the industry players and requested them to give the certificates, these certificates, analyze that data, and analyze that data as per the different elements, and he he or she will then give the overall score after the data analysis. And if the outcome is level 5, will tell us that you are level 5 based on this. And in terms of your elements, you have performed good year, you have performed bad year. And we say we decline because the previous year we were element 4. But if we are level 1, it is clear that we are one of the best. But I think we're striving to go to a level 1. Hence, we are opening about our failures and also about our weaknesses.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. Actually, when it comes to the level, it goes up to level 8, which means level 8 is non-compliance. So we are actually in between compliance and non, because we're on level 5. Thank you.
Well, in terms of SAFQUAL, I would invite, correctly, so though SAFQUAL belongs to Forest, Honourable Chair and Members, we sometimes find it a dilemma because in terms of, protocols, it reports to the Department of Enterprise one. And it is represented by Forest of Africa in Council. It does not come on as an entity on its own to account at the Council. And as a Council, we are bound by those particular constraints. But it doesn't actually deny us their right to meet with SAFQUAL and prove of this kind of matter. Correctly so as the honourable member. Previously we raised a number of issues with SAFQUAL, which the honourable chairperson, as far as we are concerned as the Petrata Council, there is no progress. I cannot come here and give a rosy story. There is no progress. And I'm not intending to put SAFQUAL in a red light, but as for previous year, we have not met with the SAFQUAL. And we've been trying to meet with the SAFQUAL management over there, and we have not received any appointment to that effect. Maybe the department will share light in terms of claims, because we also know that there are lots of millions of rains in terms of the percentage, but actually it's supposed to go to communities. Where is the money? Maybe the department will have to shed light in terms of that. The other issue is we realize that the budget that we're operating with is very minimum, but as I indicated, the council will manage the FinCom. The FinCom will look at the issues for that particular financial year. If the total amount of money perceived to be an amount of money to be used in that year, government and industry will share the money. I indicated the government pays 60% of its share and the industry will pay 40%. That's the model they are operating under. Unless also, as I indicated, that the charter, we are busy with the charter review as we stand, possibly that those kind of areas of the models, financial models, will also be part of the review. I cannot give, with due respect, the Honourable Chair and Members, I cannot give the number of permanent jobs. I would imagine that even the retrenchment that are taking place, everything has changed. This figure would not be the same in the first instance. And secondly, we have not actually categorized the permanent positions, contractors, seasonal workers, and the permanent workers. Maybe when we come back next time, we will actually have that kind of information, but at this particular stage, it would be very difficult for us to quantify and qualify in terms of the number of people that are permanently employed and those that are contractors and those that are temporary workers. Well, we've been asked whether we have we gone to the people and investigated. Maybe I should link this question to the question of us. Are we in touch with people? The real answer is no. Precisely because our job is very limited. Our mandate is limited. Our mandate is just to, we monitor, we encourage implementation of the charter. Under review, we're busy discussing whether is it not time that we extend that particular mandate, that responsibility, where I indicated that communities are represented by community representatives that are appointed by the minister. But do people know this particular chapter? And this is the analysis that we have done, and criticize ourselves honestly and openly to say our people do not know this charter council. And clearly, we can't come here again to be rude to the honorable members and claim to be known by people, yet our people do not know us. Possibility is that we do have plans, for an example, that outreach program item on the agenda have been there for long. But when it comes to implementation, again, the issue would be funding. Do we have funding to go to all our provinces? And this work has been picked up already by the service provider that is doing the work for us around the charter review. Unless there is any other issue, because I also touched the communication strategy, maybe my colleague, Mrs. Magimbia, will assist and the department will assist. Thank you very much, Chair and Honorable Members. The issue of certificates, again, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, I would imagine that that question resides with the department, because as a charter we are not responsible to issue the certificates. Maybe the department needs to comment why Saki and Marensi are given preference insofar as issuing the certificates other than the communities. I would prefer that maybe the government need to assist us in terms of that issue. Well, again, in terms of the support that is given, we continue as a charter council, precisely because some of the members that are serving in the charter council or in the board are executive directors. For example, a director from MTO, Mountain to Ocean, serves in the board. Hence, my director serves in the board. But we continue to encourage them to make it a point that in those particular transactions and operations that take in view a nature of transformation, those communities that are actually very close to them should be taken care of. Nothing more than that. The council does not have a piece or a stick, you know, if I may, for a lack of a better word, I mean, say, we don't have a stick to wield and to say, look, guys, if you don't do this, we will do that. So, I'm not sure whether it's comfortable and coffee. Do you want to add them?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Members. I will attempt the one on the poor performance on skills development. It is an observation that we've seen in our scorecard element, and we're happy to say with the new revised code, this is an element that has been made a priority element, which we are happy to say as the Forest Sector Charter Council, we are going to adopt. We are in touch with the fiber processing and manufacturing sector to give us some statistics on the skills as to so that we are able to say what are the action plans that we need to implement. I will also touch on the status quo, Chairperson and Honorable Members, of the 14-15 year, which is the current year. What we usually do is we wait for our financial year to end, because the score, the certificates are the certificates are valid for a year. So you find that some members of the enterprises are verified on the last day of the financial year. So that is when we start collecting and compile the report.
Okay. Why do you favor those companies?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, members of the committee. I just wanted to reply to some of the questions around the communities and what we do with the communities. I know that there have been challenges around collecting rental, because what happens is when those communities own land and we have commercial forests, is that those communities are provided rental, and one of the tasks of the department is to ensure that those communities do gain rental. There have been challenges, and we will continue to make that happen. I think the other thing that the department is doing around supporting communities is ensuring that they have access to working in forests, agroforestry industries, with commercial partners, also in the indigenous forests. So I think on the commercial side, we are involving them more in the permanent side with milling, saw milling and chipping, those types of projects. Also access to the forests for beekeeping, honey, firewood collection. Also, I know in Eastern Cape there have been initiatives to collect the firewood for biomass processing on quite a large scale. That project is happening. And then on the indigenous forest side, what has been happening is the facilitation around accessing for spiritual purposes and also for, you know, the products that grow in forest, such as mushroom collection and that. We touched on SAFCO slightly, but a number of previous initiatives with SAFCO were looking at new types of mushroom production that one could grow in the forest, such as, I think, the shiitake mushrooms. I know that there was a lot of collaboration with China on new mushroom genus that you could grow in forests, but we obviously have challenges around non-indigenous plants. So there are a number of initiatives working with the various communities. I think that we will be working more to improve that. I think in regards to layoffs and what is happening, what we would like to ask the indulgence of the committee, if we could provide a full report on that in writing to the committee, if you would allow us. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, we would need that, including you, Chair, if you can, the responses can be in writing. And I just want to remind members that this section in the department has not been performing for quite some time, and we should then focus on it, and we'll appreciate that report, DG. It will appear in our next meeting. We'll have to discuss it then and take all various issues, because it can't be that government, when we're spearheading issues of land reforms, it's us who are not actually moving with speed. We have to make sure that this section of the department does this work. Thank you, Chair, and we appreciate your honest response to the question. Kusi Mandela?
I don't think my questions have been covered. And in that regard, I would like, therefore, the department and to hand us a written report on the four cases that I've spoken about: Langeni Forest, Piri Bison in Yuki, Ingeni Forest towards Harding in KZN, and Sandenese Traditional Council land over the forest that is now been handed to SAPI. If I can get the written submissions on that so that we can get an understanding as to what's happening around those forests.
Okay. I think we agree, Nkosi Mandela. The report, they will have to bring the report to us, and we're still going to discuss this matter as a committee, because we should get the section of the department to focus and implement what this government stands for. And thank you very much for the presentation. Agribee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, for opportunity once again, and for good questions that have been given to me. It's quite a privilege. I want to start by saying the strat plan and budget are linked. The presentation I make today is linked to my office term, which is 3 years, and they encompass my vision as chairperson in terms where the council should go, and it's quite a challenge. Like it when you started with perpetuating the legacy. You know, that's the position that I find myself in. That's the position I'm on. But there's so much to do. But at the end of the day, it's first and first. What I want to highlight that is key is that the Agri-Hata Council does not implement the Agri-Sector Code. It's department and the industry stakeholders. You have 19 representatives in council to ensure that agriculture is broad-based and that we address issues relevant to agriculture sector, the normally called sector specifics, from what is generic on the economy. Hence, you will have your farm workers having a representative in the council to advocate issues that are the plight of farm workers and the challenges. To start the first question that deals with the advocacy agency, I want to say, Honorable Chair, being an advocacy agency resonate from the challenges that we encountered when we're doing public engagement section 9.5 before the gazetting of our goods section 9.1. What we have identified, because the question was challenges by then, was communication amongst sector stakeholders and livening. We traveled those 9 provinces and the communication is a challenge amongst them. Hence, you see that we've taken ourselves to be an advocacy agent. There's no cohesion in the sector amongst the stakeholders. I cannot speak for them from their level to government, but what I've seen from my side is that amongst the stakeholders, there's no cohesion. In the council, we have leaders, but sometimes the challenge is when you talk to a leader and the leader knows this, the membership knows otherwise. That is the challenge, and we have taken ourselves, even on my first term of office as chairperson, that I will prioritize communication and image on the structure. We have to communicate with the sector. If you look on my 2015-2016 projected annual budget, there's travel and subsistence there. The goods and services where we procure venues and traveling encompasses our program of engaging the stakeholders, even to policies. But answering your question, is a challenge is cohesion of stakeholders amongst themselves before government comes in. Stakeholders, I'm talking about your FASA, I'm talking about your NAFU, I'm talking about your accuracy, I'm talking about your APTs, I'm talking about your food bank, I'm talking about your FAU, I'm talking about market, the market agents. I'm going to pick up the challenges that I have myself, in short, that you convene those that pool of number. I won't get to what is in the present chairperson. I think my colleague there answered it very well. But in terms of report, I started as chairperson this year, January, and my last meeting is on the 26th of November. I think that's the time when I will be coordinating everything. But I believe this is not our last time engaging with Parliament. Through our secretariat, we will keep ensuring that the Parliament, the Portfolio Committee, through you, Madam Chair, is informed of what we are doing. It's very important so that even when you ask me questions, you know what I'm doing. You don't ask me questions of things that I don't know. In terms of monitoring, as I said, we don't implement, but we monitor. We introduced what's called an instrument called IT portal. The IT portal, that's a web-based system where the industry uploaded the scorecards. Then it tells you, it will assist even to identify the level that the sector is on. As I said, it is the first year. We only issued a media statement on my first term of office for industry stakeholders to start uploading their scorecards. And the challenge is you can only, as we review, you issue a media statement and review the performance of the media statement. To me, it said to me, those who are able to access computers and information that is agriculture specific are the ones that can give you a better feedback. It also taught me that we must do more in terms of getting the rural communities to come on board. But the instrument that we're using in terms of monitoring the performance is IT portal. In terms of funding the budget, money to do the work and mission, the department, the budget is will be coming from the department, 100% of it. Now we are not yet in the position where we will be proud to say stakeholder is giving me 40 and department is giving me 60, but I'm hopeful that as the year goes we'll get to that. I think I answered the issue of who's doing what in terms of monitoring and reporting. But there's one thing that I want to mention that is very important, that spoke to the issue of framework. It's Honorable Joseph, I think, who asked it, about developing framework for the implementation. What we are doing, if you look at the codes are on public domain, agri sector codes that were promulgated on 28 December 2012, of course, thank you. There's some pages that tells you what are the government undertakings in terms of transforming the agriculture sector, what is farming community, farming enterprises undertakings, those commitments, they are there. And in my second term of office, I've made it a priority, and it's under discussion now. We've developed the reporting template to ensure that the set of stakeholders and the government, in terms of their commitments on the sector codes, are held accountable. It cannot be said that we will train people and then people are left alone, and then we have to come back and check, did you train people? And the reporting template will also assist us, and even when we share information with industry stakeholders, to say this is as far as the government did, this is as far as your industry did. More precisely, the agribusiness is also there. They will have to come to council and report in terms of what they are doing on transformation. What did we do in terms of advocacy? As a deputy chairperson, before we've gone to public comments, we've attended the congresses of industry stakeholders. Those are the platforms where you are able to influence processes. Even when you're given a mic, you're able to influence the process. And that process, Madam Chair, is underway. It's part of my communication with the industry stakeholders and the sector. I know I've attended Agribus Congress, I've attended AgriSA Congress. Without mentioning names of stakeholders, I can proudly say what we've achieved. I've achieved on my first term of office is we managed to get one big agricultural union to amend their constitution to make a space for a previously disadvantaged black person to be part of the board. And that particular black person is a deputy president of the biggest agriculture union in South Africa. That one thing I've achieved by going to the Congress. In terms of advocacy with regard to transformation of agriculture, myself alone, I cannot do much as chairperson. I don't have staff, so I have to rely on staff trying to come to that with a question Madam Chair asked about the status quo. I rely on DAF, but you must understand they don't report to me. I cannot charge them. So when this budget and strat plan will give me abilities to have my own staff and be able to charge them when they did things in a way that we didn't agree. But as I can assure you, Honorable Member, in terms of advocacy, the conference that we've attended, they will tell you that I'm a vocal person, you know, I'm very vocal, and we managed to influence one agricultural union. There are so many large companies that are transformed as we speak, but we'll keep on engaging them to show them the value of transformation, because at the end of the day, you must move away from forcing people and take an approach of, hey, this is a benefit of of having a black person in your board. This has been the benefit of having a black person in your management position. But you also want to emphasize that, Madam Chair, I said it, I don't want a black person who's part of a board and who drinks tea all the time. We need a black person who influence decisions. We need a black person who make changes on these companies. Because at the end of the day, they come and say, we don't have black people with skills to be part of management and all that. But I'm looking forward on that process. And through our alignment with the engagement with the DTIs and other courts, we are addressing that, and I'm here to report that APIS is assisting us with that process, because you can't come and say people don't have skills, but I need to know in which area is people insufficient of skills. So those conferences have been assisting us to be more efficient, and we also rely on the media statement that we issue out. There will be something about transformation of agricultural sector, but what we need to do more, being honest, is to add to what this transformation of agriculture means, because the interpretation is skewed in some areas. But as I said, this is my first office term, and with that reasonable budget, I'm sure we'll do well as we go forward. Another question of Madam Chair, which deals with security of tenure and farm dollar. When I started in the council, I think 8 years ago, I was from the land activism and agrarian farm. I was passionate about the issue of tenure security. So I'm from workers' level. I was against the eviction. I'm still, of course. But the position that I'm on now, you find yourself dealing with the tenure issue from the commercial farmer side and the farm dweller side, and I am the one we have to come up with a balance. And we only address that, Madam Chair, through the agribusiness sector, because that's the level where you have your farming opportunity to ensure that within those elements of empowerment that are currently five, the tenor of farm dwellers, the security of tenor, farm workers as well, because there's farm girl and there's farm worker, are encompassed on those elements as we go forward. But we are saying, because we are inclusive in the council, not only that, we need farm workers and farm rulers to own these enterprises that are happening in the farm. Rather than focusing previously on perceiving them as workers for life and farm dwellers for life, and we can only achieve greater results but when we assist government to ensure that the programs that government comes with forward are implemented. Let me know what I want to say from my side as a statement. I'm sitting in a position where you are dealing with the legacy of apartheid, what the system of apartheid did to the economy, not only to the economy, to the people as well. And you need to make sure that what we've inherited from the previous system is balanced with what the constitution says and where the country should go, which is the NDP. But I cannot do all that today and the next week. It goes with years and years, and I'm hopeful that in time we'll get there. I've heard the wonderful responses from the commercial guys. I've said to them, let's not personalize these things. We are addressing the legacy of authority that excluded the black person from the economy, not what a particular white or black person did by the system. And collectively, as South Africans, black and white, we are owed to ourselves to ensure that when we go forward, such history of excluding certain particular race in the economy doesn't happen. It's our all responsibility. And we are also saying the DE and transformation of agricultural sector should be on the win-win basis. It should not put another one outside the economy and put another, but everybody must benefit. Thank you very much. I'll give to my colleague if there's something I missed.
Thank you, Chairperson, and to the honourable members. I will just touch on the issue of the budget. Honourable Chair, you have asked what happened to the 2014-15 financial year. I just want to indicate that for that financial year, we have accommodated the council into one of the directorates' budget. So that is why we are not having a fee at the, meaning that we are just compensating them for their costs within the directorate. And on the issue of the report, Chairperson and honourable members, we should remember that the charter, the Agri-BEE was publicised as Section 9.1 in December of 2012. So we have been on the first year of implementation with the first report due at the end of this financial year. In terms of the portal, what is the uptake? And what I can say there is that the final report that we are going to give, it's going to dictate to us as to how many of the firms have been active in that particular in the portal, because that is the instrument that we are going to use. That's going to tell us as to the level of transformation in the sector and how many of the companies, within the sector have participated. And I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. DG, you want to say something?
I think all of the questions on Agri-BEE have in the main been answered. Firstly, as you say, there is a link between what is being reported by the Forestry Sector Charter Council and the performance of the forestry branch in the department. And it is, for example, that Honourable Mandela raised about claims and appeals by communities to the department that remains unresolved. I will get the exact details from Honourable Mandela, who the secretary, so if we can answer to that and to the other questions. And I think that another output that we quite look forward to is the review, which I think the Forestry Council Chairperson spoke to, which is in progress, and the next time when we were able to report on that too. But we'll make sure that within a reasonable time we are able to respond in writing, hopefully before the committee arrives at the end of the term.
Thank you very much. That was that, members. I think from where I'm seated, including at the Agri-BEE charter, we've not done much, did you? We have to improve our work and make sure that we move with speed. Because now it's 20 years. I know I'll take that 20 years. We're still learning and we're still preparing everybody. But now, the president talked about the radical shift. We want to see it happening in both sectors. And we'll appreciate the chair, both chairs, if you can actually move with speed. Next time we should actually get the better feedback. And thank you very much for coming. We appreciate your availability toward us. Thank you very much. Now we are going to allow my former minister to address us from the left bank.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. We'll ask our acting CEO to do the presentation. Thank you.
CEO.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and the Honourable Members. Madam Chair, the contents of my presentation is requested by the committee.
Members, let them see us until 16 the presentation. 5 minutes break. Thank you.
Yeah,
Thank you, Honorable Member. Can we resume with our meeting? Where is your chair? Oh, you didn't see the... Okay. Who can start without you?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable Members. My name is Lindwe Mdlalose, and with me to assist me on the presentation is MK, who is Head of Retail Emerging Markets, Jerome Tembu, who is responsible for our legal and strategy, and we've got Lepenze Radikele from National Treasury. And Madam Chair, as requested by the committee, the contents of our presentations are the Masisa Fund, Agri-BE Fund, and the Retail Emerging Emerging Farmers. Now, I will do this, Mafisa and the Agri-BE Funds, and MK will cover the Retail Emerging Market presentation. Madam Chair, I think it's important to explain the role of the Land Bank regarding the administration of the Mafisa Funds. There's an agreement that was signed by Land Bank and the Department of Agriculture that was signed in 2006. And in 2008, after experiencing challenges, the two institutions agreed to revise the agreement. A new agreement was signed in 2008. And I must say, Madam Chair, that from 2008 up until 2013, a total of 1.3 billion, just under 1.4 billion, has been disbursed by Land Bank through the instructions that were given by Department of Agriculture. And currently, Madam Chair, November 2013, then there was an instruction from a National Treasury to return the funds to the National Revenue Fund, and I've got my colleague here from National Treasury who will explain to the committee members as to what is the whole process regarding the recalling of funds. And the account is still active at the Land Bank because some of the disbursements that the Land Bank made, there were loans and there were grants. Now regarding the loans, the farmers or the beneficiaries or the intermediaries are still paying, sending the loans and repaying the loans into the account. And as of the status of September 2014, there was a balance of 2.5 million in the account. And we continue receiving the payments. There has been a discussion between National Treasury, DAF and Land Bank to rework on the processes and enhance efficiencies. And regarding the Agri-BE, Madam Chair, again, AgriBEE, the funds, the administration of the funds are also governed by an agreement or MOE that we signed with the department. And it's been reviewed on a regular basis. And currently, you know, like we are also in the process of reviewing the agreement to make sure that we enhance on all the inefficiencies. And what I would like to bring to the attention of the members is that the different roles of Land Bank and DAF. The role of DAF is to transfer, was to transfer the funds to Land Bank. And DAF receives the applications for projects. And DAF does the initial screening. Then they recommend what they are supporting to the Land Bank, for the Land Bank to do a due diligence. And Land Bank would do a due diligence, and then whatever that is recommended by Land Bank, it is referred back to DAF for DAF to make a final approval. Once that approval has been made by DAF, then an instruction gets sent to the Land Bank, whereby Land Bank has to make a divestment. And what happens is that Land Bank would request for supporting documents to accompany the divestment instructions. And where there has, we don't receive adequate supporting documents, there is that engagement. So from 2008 up until 2013, from AgriBEE funds, there were no disbursements. No disbursements at all. And in November, there was an instruction again from National Treasury to return a fund which was a total of 228 million, roughly about just under 230 million. And post the retaining of funds, there was an application that was approved before the retaining of funds, which was a project called Tropical Mushroom, and the total amount was 2.5. Post the retaining of funds, that 2.5 has already been paid out. And then there were 5 applications that we received from DAF, totaling 70, just under 18 million. And around May, there was a total transfer of 35 million from DAF to the Land Bank. And those applications, those 5 applications that totals about 18 million, should be funded from that 37 million. Now, there hasn't been any disbursement from the 35 million. Land Bank and DAF and National Treasury are again in discussions regarding, you know, like the disbursement of those funds and enhancing the MOU, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, that concludes my presentation on MAFISA and AgriBEE, and I will request my colleague MK to present the retail ledging. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, we as Land Bank have been challenged, particularly historically when it came to financing emerging farmers, particularly those who lacked security and access to land as per the traditional financing policy. And therefore the Land Bank, through the board and its executive, set up what was called the Retail Emerging Markets Division. It was really to deal with the challenges that faced emerging farmers. And we list some of the key challenges: high cost of funding. As a result of the high cost of funding, a lot of our black farmers defaulted on the loans that they had currently received. And of the book at the time, out of 900 million, almost 360 million were defaults because of the way in which we were supporting farmers. So the farmers were not being integrated into the value chain, and there was no dedicated focus, which was the reason why the REN division was formed. The solution looked at cash flow lending. Instead of saying we ask for security and we don't lend without you owning the land, so we can lend to you if it is communal land, if there is leased land, PTO, or even owned land restitution. We looked at concessionary funding or lending rates, because the traditional interest rates for startup farmers or emerging farmers have always been very onerous. At some point in time, we were lending to farmers based on risk at prime plus 5, which was a kind of a problem for our emerging farmers. Two processes were identified how we can then approach this market. One, what we call a wholesale lending facility where we used intermediaries or established agricultural institutions to support specifically black farmers. Because it covered the whole value chain, in most cases they provided markets and they were able to support the farmer from end to end, from the day they started preparing the land to the day they took. They did offtake. And of course, there are people who come through the direct network of the branch. Those are the two approaches we have. If you look at what you have on the screen, it talks to the various elements that were being dealt with in trying to overcome some of the challenges of emerging farmers. The first one was really to create access to finance that was the conditions were not onerous. Because in our traditional lending, if you don't have security, you are not eligible. If you are on communal land, you are not eligible because we can't make a bond over it. So those are to remove some of the conditions. So if you look at create access and revise security requirements, the first at the top and the bottom, the yellow and the corner, those two kind of related to kind of easing the conditions, and the bank took a policy in that regard. I was also looking at specific products. What kind of products are most suited for an emerging farmer? In a lot of cases, we were providing products for emerging farmers out of ignorance and not being supported. We're taking up products that were not beneficial to them. Such an example as such of them going into citrus as a startup when it takes 5 years to get a return. It's very difficult for an emerging farmer to survive 5 years with only expenses and no income. So we looked at our products mix. And the aftercare. In our traditional lending, we give money and the farmer goes and does his business, and the time when he pays, he comes back. Here we say we engage the farmer, or we are with the farmer from the time he takes up a facility till when he sells his product. So he's supported or given aftercare, not just the finance. There's a lot of emphasis on aftercare and on-field support. And offtake agreements an issue up front. Offtake is really who buys product. So that is set up in the beginning so that the farmer has a market and he has a price, and that is worked into his cash flow projections. We also support them. A lot of cases, farmers have had challenges presenting business plans that are called bankable, because they've been usually you provided security, so it didn't really matter. If you failed, we could take the security. Now on the business plan side, we looked at cash flow, we looked at the projections, how realistic and how viable were they. So that became very critical, and we provide that. So we took away the issue of balance sheet, because a lot of our farmers don't have a balance sheet. They don't have management records because of their incapability. And that was a requirement previously for all farmers. So those were the kind of things we used to. And the whole objective was to graduate these farmers over a certain period into commercial farmers. That really sets up the framework. The next slide really talks to the details of the process and looks at the steps. We do planning with them, we do engagement, preparation, execution, and reinvestment. That is really a more of an elaboration of the processes that I'd already elaborated in the previous slide. Our emphasis, the areas of emphasis in the country really have followed the areas of poverty as outlined by the government identification. So our targets, priority areas, I'm not saying we don't do other areas, but our priority areas are Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, the Northwest, and Limpopo. We do have some other areas, but these are the key focus areas of the program. What is the current exposure? At this point in time, our book is just short of 400 million at 391 million, which has been given out to farmers. We have pipeline as at September of 723 million. What has been the impact so far? We financed 365 farmers. We created, out of the farmers we have financed, we have 4,000, almost 5,000 permanent employees, 700 seasonal temporary employees. Because of the business we're in, we find that a lot of it's very seasonal in terms of it goes up, because a lot of the farmers or the people only work at particular points. We've been impacted about 51,000 beneficiaries across the areas in which we're financing. We currently, on owned land, which is land that is owned by either communities or farmers, we have 13,000 hectares. on leased or communal land, we have about 139,000 hectares in the program, which is land that we previously would not have financed on because our policies precluded us from financing land we could not bond. And now that requirement has fallen away, and therefore the leased land jumped up. Most of our farmers go through some training programs, and 415 have currently gone through the programs. And those who have attended, and when we say farmers, those are people who may not have been farmers we financed, but were in the tutelage of certain farmers. We've done about 1,400. The value of assets that have been generated, which is the difference between what the farmers owned at the beginning and what they currently own after 3 years in the program, is about 213 million, and the turnover, which have been increased by about 100 million. That is a summary of the impact of the program since its inception 3 years ago. Basically, that's the summary of the program. I mean, where we are, why haven't we done more? We suffer from funding because our funding really is not market related. We have to subsidize for the farmers. We have to provide a lot of support. That is the cost that the bank carries, and therefore sometimes our funding lines to provide this kind of support are not exactly available, which is why we are limited in the rate at which we can grow the program. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
MK.
I hope you are not representing the army that I know. And the CEO of Land Bank. Chair, you want to say something before we...
We hope that Treasury will explain the recording of the funds.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the board in the house. You will recall that when we took over Land Bank in 2008, it had no rosy history. We had just completed the forensic audit, and in the forensic audit we discovered that there were lots of funds or loans that we actually made wrongly, meaning outside mandate number one and two, recklessly. And as such, there was a big write-off of that book of all the land bank, which basically cost a lot of money. Now, this is one of the main things that the minister made clear, that we're not going to see the land bank in this situation again. Never. Now, you remember the Treasury recommends and advises Parliament where to spend money. And we use both the PFNA and the Treasury regulations to manage those funds. Now, all programs that we recommend and advise Parliament to pass, have all of them, they have a well-defined purpose. And if any institution or any department deviates from the purpose, they have to come from National Treasury. And it's up to the Minister of Finance to approve the environment or the shifting of money from one program to another. Otherwise, in terms of the Treasury regulations, the Treasury has got the power to recall those money or those funds. There were two letters that were actually written to government departments, not necessarily enough, but all government departments, and the two individual institutions. The first letter that was written was basically, it was written in July by National Treasury. But that letter was written basically as part of the process of rationalizing surplus money that we're actually sitting in the departments and in the government institutions. And those monies are the monies that were actually lying idle without being spent for a period for more than a year. And Land Bank was one of those institutions that we actually wrote to. And then the second letter was actually written in October. But this letter was actually directed to DAF, requesting DAF to request Land Bank to put the demand, repay the money, with regard to Mafisa, and Akademie. And the reason being that one, Lemberg actually advised us that agriculture has requested that the Department of Culture has requested them that they actually utilize that money for a purpose that was not initially meant for. And the second thing is that that money was actually sitting in the account for too long. And then we advised our DG, who actually instructed us to write to Land Bank, in fact to write to DAF, that they should actually take money, that requested that the DAF actually deposit that money back into the National Revenue Fund. Now what we normally do is that, in terms of the regulations, treasury regulations of PFMA, we put the responsibility to protect the fiscal. And when we realize that one money stays long in the department without being spent, or in the institution without being spent, we actually record that money. The second one is if the money is actually used for a reason that was not necessarily appropriated for by government, we actually request the department either to return that money. What we as National Treasury try to avoid is a situation where we have departments doing what we call fiscal dumping, where they realize that this money is not going to be spent for a period meant to be spent, and then they decide to transfer it to a particular institution. Because when the money is basically transferred to a particular institution, there is a bigger chance that that money will be utilized for wrong reasons or for reasons not actually approved by government. And in this, when we find ourselves in that position, we actually interpret as financial management. It means the Minister of Finance has to answer on what happened on that money. It means the department also to answer. So what we try to do is to avoid a situation where we have to answer for all those things of that we could actually have managed to control. The Minister and the DG have made it clear to us that if one of the institutions of government spend money in a way that was not meant to, we as officials must make sure that we take action. And the institution or the department must actually account for it. And in this case, when we record AgriBE money, it has stayed in the department, in the books of the land bank for more than 2 years, or 5 years, without being spent. Now that says they don't need it. Now, you should remember that government borrows money, most of the money that we have, we are actually sending, we're borrowing it, at a cost of 8% on average. Now, if that money is given by a department or a particular institution, they need to use it, one, in a proper way, two, timely. And if you realize that you don't need those two conditions, we don't hesitate to call that money back. And in this case, the AgriBE and MAFISA suffered the same thing with cost. But you should remember, like as I said earlier on, it is not only about MAFISA and AgriBE. It's about all government programs where money is sitting idle without being utilized, to avoid fiscal dumping, or where money is going to spend for a purpose not meant to be. And in this case, we found ourselves having to actually recall the money from Land Bank to the National Revenue Fund. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable National Treasury. I nearly said your Honorable. Thank you very much. Chair, you still want to say something?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for this chance. We have attempted to show to the portfolio committee of the areas of activity in addressing imbalances and disparities in agricultural, forestry and fisheries sector in the country as the lender that is government sanctioned and government supported. We are undertaking an institutional review, a review of the land bank, and I would hope that your portfolio committee should also play a part in that organizational review. Because we have to look at probably a new funding model.
we have to look at a new financing structure that will be make the land banks sustainable financially. And we have also got to look at new instruments, particularly in the retail emerging markets, where the issues of rigor in terms of securities, in terms of track records, are real issues for the newcomers. You know, MK has fairly well explained this issue, but it should be part of the review so that new instruments, new funding methods are devised. So I'm hoping that the portfolio committee will be part of that process. Otherwise, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, I'm not going to ask you to ask questions. precisely because it will help us to discuss this issue in the presence of the Minister of Agriculture. I'm going to request honourable members to note the report, and we will then go on to invite the minister. Why I'm raising this issue? One, we still remember that we have requested the Department of Planning and Monitoring and Evaluation. They've done their evaluation on CASP and Masisa. We should discuss these issues holistically so that we close the chapter of the of the legal affair report and we move forward. We would ask DG to forward a report as we have requested on the evaluation of CASP and Masisa that was done by the Department of Planning and Monitoring and Evaluation, so that as we're going to discuss this issue, we shall have the old view, because as we remember, one of its mandates is to support the small farmers. So how does it link to the land bank section that deals with the support? And unless we, and you have ARC, you have NAMAC, which deals with the marketing council, how do you streamline all the agencies towards putting in them in such a strategy where they would then be able to access the resources, support the small farmers? Because to give farmers money without technical support is just like throwing money in the deep end. So I'm saying, with the permission, I'm requesting that we don't discuss this issue and schedule another meeting with the Minister Nkosi Mandela, so that we are able to, because now we're going to postpone a lot of issues. If you've listened to what Lebeng has presented, it directs us to the Minister. Okay, so Honourable Nkosi Mandela.
Thanks. I would comply in not asking questions, but I think the information provided is not sufficient. And I would like, before we meet with the minister and the department, for us to be furnished with the right weapon so that we are able to engage properly with the minister. For example, on slide 17, it talks about farmers that have been financed, 355 farmers. Who are these farmers? Where are they located? And how many per province? And how much were they financed? These are the questions we'd like to know. Because if there are farmers that have been financed in the Eastern Cape, I can reach out to, I can do oversight, I can engage with them and be able to speak to the minister on an informed basis. We also have the Chairperson leased and communal hectares that are farmed what communal lands have been farmed, where are they, under which traditional council, and what else has been done in terms of capacitating and building relationships with traditional councils through the National House of Traditional Leaders, Provincial House of Traditional Leaders, and the Regional House of Traditional Leaders. But there is also the issue of the treasurer here telling us that the land bank was recklessly or wrongfully found to have financed or approved some of the funds. These statements need to be truly unpacked, Chairperson.
But not now.
Yes, and this is what I'm saying. We need information on that. So that when we are able to speak to the minister, we don't say, or we hear that funds were recklessly used. We need details on this. How much of those funds were recklessly used? What was the process that was dealt with in order to salvage the situation? Were there any people dismissed? Were there any people arrested? Were there any people under investigation? These are the things that we need to know. You don't go to the minister, the department, and fire it just because you just have questions that are not informed. So can we kindly please be finished with all the information before we have the meeting with the minister? Thank you.
Okay.
Well, sorry, Honorable Chair, Honorable Nkosi Mandela has asked very important questions. I just want to point out that this is a legacy issue. It was not during this board's tenure. It was prior to 2010 where these things happened. Thank you.
I think in even if it's a legacy chair, you inherit all the issues. So rest assured, if at the time we're going to discuss, you must answer. Honorable Ramakwas.
Very short. I think your request around the approach is as correct, so that we take the matter as a package. I would support your proposal that we go that.
Honorable Smith. Yes, Jefferson, I would also support that. I think it's one of the most pressing issues regarding smallholders. Farmers that we need to look into, but I would also, Chairperson, support that we get more information, and I will just mention one or two things for future, because I read the first one that was not presented, the document that we received, and in that it's all, most of the, what you call the intermediaries, it says contract expired, not renewed, contract expired, not renewed, contract expired, but so what, and it expired in 2011 and it expired in 2010, but there is no mention of that in the new documents. We don't know what has happened, who is now in charge. And even, Chairperson, the document is so flimsy, if I can call it, for lack of a better word. We don't actually know, as the Honorable Mandela says, where, who, how many. And we just want to know 365 farmers financed. When were they financed? Do they have a term that are some of them now standing on their own feet? When, you know, the information checkers is really not helping us much. Thank you.
There is agreement that would come back to the issues and will request the CEO and your team to add all the information as members requesting before we submit the report. For instance, in some of the areas you're talking about annexures and we don't have them. So we'll request that we have that information. And Chair, rest assured, me and you must, we have inherited this and we have to be accountable. So it goes with the work. There is no gap in government. And thank you very much for coming. And we appreciate that you've invited the committee to make input into your review, and we'll do that. But we just need to unpack all these issues and get a response from the department. And at that time, we'd need everybody who has to respond, so that we don't have somebody to say, I must go and consult the EG treasurer. Yes, all of will call you at the right time. And thank you very much for coming. There is a lunch. You can have a lunch as you go out. Thank you very much.
Sorry for you.